for April 4th, 2011. It's the Overthinking It podcast, episode 144, Uncanny Valley Ranch. Welcome to the Overthinking It podcast, where we subject the popular culture to a level of scrutiny it probably doesn't deserve. With a 16-ounce tumbler of fine Kentucky bourbon, I am your host, Matthew Rather, here with the panel to overthink all manner of things, including summer movies. That's right, after our perhaps least goal-directed episode of the year, or of the series, after the one where we just basically hit record, and let what happens happen. We come to you with our annual most goal-directed episode of the year, the one where we intend to set out to preview the summer movies of this fine year, 2011. It's one more than 2010, and we, we go through the releases and see what we think of it, and we inevitably get sidetracked at some point. Now, we're taking bets on what the over-under is for, I guess over-under doesn't make sense because there isn't exactly a median movie that we can get to. We're taking bets on what movie we get.
Nice application of statistics, right?
Yeah, right. On what movie we get to. I heard Fast Five in the pre-show. I'm going to say that we get to The Hangover Part 2, before we go totally off the rails and have to call it a podcast. I don't know. Everyone will let us think at what point we're going to fall off the wagon here. But in the meantime, in honor of this week's wide release movies, Hop, Insidious, and Source Code, we're going to ask someone to perform an insidious hop on the source code of overthinking.com. No, we performed our own insidious.
I'm applauding that, Matt. That was beautiful.
We performed our own insidious hop on the source code of overthinking.com when we did our April Fool's Day joke, underthinking it. I hope you saw that because it truly was a glorious application of Comic Sans to web design. Don't see a lot of Comic Sans on websites, you know? In a way, I wish you saw more. In a way. I, of course, was using overthinking it speak. In a way is code for the statement I'm about to make is false. In honor of Source Code, which opened this weekend, the question of the week, if you could relive the last 8 minutes of everybody's life, Pete will tell us, though, this is he's the one who saw this movie. If you could relive the last 8 minutes of anybody's life, whose life would you relive the last 8 minutes of? Yeah? I'd love to know.
All right.
Absolutely. Pete Fenzel, you are first in the alphabet because all is right with the universe. What is going on?
Awesome. I'm feeling a lot better than I was last week, which is spectacular and great. It is nice that that too did pass. So I saw Source Code, and the premise of Source Code, I mean, there's very complicated. It's extremely complicated. But the sort of front page premise is you can quantum leap using technology into the last 8 minutes of somebody's life. And they use it primarily to solve crimes, right? But that's kind of the idea, right? And so I thought, hey, who's the last 8 minutes of their life would you want to experience or be in their shoes for? Of course, I like to pick unorthodox choices because it allows other people to pick the obvious ones in case they don't come up with a suggestion for my crazy idea for the question. And also just because I like to mix it up a little bit. So I'm going to go with a man, and I Googled him quickly to get his name, a man by the name of – and he's not dead. So it's going to be what happens in the future to him because I'm just curious – the last 8 minutes of his life are going to be like Dennis van der Dreyschen, also known as Dansky, who is the Dutch dance music producer, one of the Dutch dance music producers who created the Venga Boys. And I'm thinking if someone's going to have an 8 minute loop, that's going to sort of be like the 8 minute loop to end all 8 minute loops. I want it to be like the guy who came up with Boom 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 or We Like to Party. I don't know if you guys are all familiar with them. You guys know the Venga Boys. I don't know if the people from home remember the Venga Boys.
They are from like 1999 or something like that, right?
The Wikipedia lists them as active between 1997 and 2004, and then from 2006 to present, which I was not aware of. but the thing about is coming and everybody's coming.
Presumably they were released from prison around 2006.
Exactly. And then, yeah. They did some time for possession of fat beats. Exactly. So no, I think that the Venga Boys have a way of filling human experience and time that kind of defies explanation. And so I'd like to know how they would face filling that particular time. I also think that Source Code would have been a lot funnier if every time he had to repeat the 8 minutes, which he has to do a lot of times, like there was a Venga Boys song playing for most of it. I think,
or if someone just went, Wiki remix.
Whoops. What? Okay. Kapow. It's not a very hip-hop movie. I'll say that much. It is not very hip-hop.
What do you mean by that, Pete? Are you trying to say there's no black people in this movie?
It's not correct. There are some black people in the movie. They are fairly minor characters. No. It's much more of a sort of like continental existential philosophy kind of movie, and much less of a sort of like, oh man, Nick Cannon has to win the heart of that girl at that HBC before the other guy. Do you guys even know what HBCs are? I think you do, right?
Historically, I know who Nick Cannon is. Does that come from something?
It's a bank, right?
What?
Isn't it a bank?
Yeah, it is a sort of a bank. It's a bank of talent, the talented 10th. It's a bank of America's future. Thank you. I'm expecting my check in the mail, Howard University. You can send it whatever you like.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Mark Lee!
That was a birth. That was.
I started some water boiling before you started talking there, Pete, just in case.
Yeah. If there's anything we're good at on the Overthinking It podcast, it's timing. Am I right? Am I right? Okay. My choice.
Yes, you are right. Wow, all three of us jumped on that at the same time.
Just getting even better.
It probably doesn't. Oh, did I come in early?
That's right.
Okay, my choice is probably an obvious one. The answer is Jesus of Nazareth. Now, think about this. So, for those of you who haven't brushed up on your theology recently, remember that at least Catholic theology teaches that Jesus Christ, after he was resurrected from the dead, and he came back from the dead, was subsumed, you know, his entire sort of being was subsumed into heaven, right?
Body and soul.
Therefore, you could say that Jesus of Nazareth should not have died, you know, or sort of have a terminal end to his life. I'm not talking about before hanging on the cross. So if I were to try to relive the last 8 minutes of the life of Jesus of Nazareth, I should not be able to do that. Unless, see where I'm going with this, right? Unless that last 8 minutes of his life happens to be him hanging on the cross and then end the story. In which case I can report back to the world that, well, sorry guys.
I like how
thing.
We came up with really similar answers to the question.
In a way, the Venga Boys are like Jesus Christ.
I'd say, exactly. Mark, as a lifelong Jew, too, like bringing the world the message that Jesus was not resurrected from the dead, nor was he the Son of God, you know, it's not really going to have a noticeable effect on people's behavior.
What, really? Even to come back with incontrovertible evidence?
I've been saying this for years, yeah. But, you know. As my rabbi would often point out, you know, probably the best part about killing Jesus, and like, let's face it, there were a lot of really good parts. I mean, they made movies about it. You know, it's sort of just a tribute reel. But the best part was when he didn't come back.
Huh. Hey, but have you guys read the newest Testament? It goes as such: boom, 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 boom. In my room. We'll spend the night together from now until forever.
Oh.
Boom, boom, boom. I want to go boom, boom. Let's spend the night together in my room. I really see that as a message.
I got to
look, that thing of us is coming, and you're either going to be on it with Kirk Cameron or you're not, all right? So,
I was handed exactly that text on a religious tract while getting on the subway today.
Oh, you really? Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah.
You got on the subway today?
No.
No, of course you didn't. Sunday. Why would you ride the subway on a Sunday? I lived with you for a year. You never rode the subway on a Sunday.
Way to break the fourth wall.
Sorry. No, you did. You some.
No, it's fine.
Fair enough. I'm sorry. I shouldn't nag. I should not nag. I should keep things positive. That's what the Venga Boys would want us to do. keep things positive. They were still with us today.
WWVBD.
Exactly.
Okay.
Have you heard the good news? The good news about the Vengo Boys?
They came back in 2006 and apparently have been recording albums.
Dave Schechner!
probably doesn't. Oh, shoot.
Are you sampling me, Pete?
Remix!
Are you sampling me, Mark?
What?
Oh god, I'm gonna have to freestyle, aren't I? This is the worst podcast idea ever. Let's have a freestyle. I could just like wholeheartedly crib from an old Onion article and say Stanley Kubrick, because you know the last 8 minutes of his life are just going to be an indecipherable light show with no clear description of ending or explanation.
That's very nice.
Yeah, which would be great. I'm actually going to go with a true story just because I think it's a really interesting story, even if it's totally apocryphal. But I'd heard that the ending of Ludwig von Beethoven's life was really dramatic, much unlike the rest of his life, which was pretty bland all in all. All the alternative answer I have is Pete Fenzel's last 8 minutes, which I think will last 12 minutes.
thanks very much.
Nothing but love for you, Petey. So Beethoven, of course, like famously deaf for the majority of his adult life. And by the last couple of weeks of his life, I forget, like he's suffering from some ailment combined with just being old, but had basically lost all connection with the outside world whatsoever. So he could no longer see, you know, no obvious like response to touch or so forth. And, you know, his family physician is sort of standing by his side, you know, watching him, monitoring his vitals as best as they can, and comes to the conclusion that, you know, Beethoven's going to pass away probably that night. And so he contacts, you know, his sister, who's his only living relative at the time, and a couple of close friends. So, and they all wrote about this. So, you know, as much as we can believe some German chick who had a famous brother, this is true. So it's like a rainstorm outside, really colossal thunderstorm going on. And the Beethoven, you know, the sort of barely alive body of Beethoven, who for years has not been able to hear anything and lately cannot see anything, is just sort of lying there, barely holding on to the last threads of life. And in the last couple of moments of his existence, like slowly begins to raise his arm up from his bed, which is the most that he's moved in months, and grasps frantically at the air, just this one clutch in the way that like a Bond villain would clutch the air when he describes how soon the world will be at his mercy. And at the moment that he clutches, lightning strikes the tree just outside their window, and his hand falls limp at his side, and he's pronounced dead.
So why would you want to do that? Why would you? That's horrible.
The man could control lightning for his life.
But what good is it to be able to control lightning if you can't perceive that you've controlled lightning successfully?
Oh, way to throw in the existential box.
Sorry.
Thanks for that. That's good. Very zen of you, Bongo Boys.
I'm just saying boom, 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 boom. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying anything substantive.
Fall back on your scripture verses. You have no original thought. Quote from the good book.
Oh, man. That is pretty awesome, though. I had no idea that Beethoven had power over the elements.
Well, one element, and briefly.
Oh, lightning.
Yeah.
Is lightning an element? I guess lightning is an element. That's one of the things you run into sometimes in fantasy is there's, like, elementals that have various qualities, and a lot of them are, like, you know, pretty obscure and not actually elements.
It's like, I am molybdenum.
I'm a plant elemental. That doesn't make sense.
Diglett Dig. Trio. Okay.
What about you, Matt?
Now it's my turn.
I should have waited. I'm sorry. I couldn't stand the silence. To fill it.
So I, in order to research this question, I Wikipedia searched for famous deaths. And so there is on Wikipedia an article entitled "Lists of People by Cause of Death." And so I'm going to read some entries from this. Lists of deaths by aircraft misadventure. Lists of people who were Lists of people who were beheaded.
I'm sorry. They probably mean that the aircraft fly into something, or you know, are somehow you know technically malfunction over the Pacific or whatnot. But I also imagine it's like a Hardy Boys style. It's like the mystery of Aircraft Cove.
Misadventure. It must be smugglers, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly.
List of professional cyclists who died during a race. Lists of inventors killed by their own inventions. List of prison deaths. Lists of victims of fatal snake bites in the United States by decade.
Wikipedia is a really morbid place.
And then towards the bottom, because all this was not unusual enough, list of unusual deaths. Anyway, so I've taken my answer from the Wikipedia list of people killed in duels.
Nice.
So my answer is I would like to live the last 8 minutes of Alexander Hamilton's life, the former U.S. Treasury Secretary, who was killed in a duel by Vice President Aaron Burr in 1804, according to Wikipedia. I just think being killed in a duel would be a good way to go. At least an interesting way to go. At least your last minutes would not be boring. You know, would not be like laying in bed surrounded by the love of family and friends, you know, as you quietly waste away. I can't think of any...
Be able to briefly control the element of lightning.
I can't think of anything more dull. No. If I'm going to go, I'm going to go big. Now, I was going to choose Elvis Presley. For this, though his last minutes must have been quite miserable, but
he's not, dead.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I didn't choose him. Is that Elvis is alive and well, and living in I don't know, living in the apartment below mine, judging from the noises that come sometimes.
By the way, I want to clarify that if you were confusing the song Boom 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 with the song Boom Boom Boom, they're in fact different songs. The former is by the Venga Boys and the latter is by the Out There Brothers. So if you're trying to choose, if you're actually using a source code machine to try to relive the last 8 minutes of the life of one of the Venga Boys, don't accidentally forget one of the booms and end up with the guy who wants to say, let me hear you say way-o.
Way-o.
Boom! Muhammad says, "Wayo." There we go. Podcast, your booty is so round. I won't go any farther into the song. Oh man!
Awesome. All right. Well, let's launch into it. It's time. It's time for the April 2011 movie releases. Let's go. Bam. Wait,
can I make a brief proposition that we actually start in March?
Yeah, I was thinking about that thing. That was the first thing that I wanted to talk about. Where do you peg the beginning of movie season this year?
And right, I think a few years ago when Watchmen came out, we had this sort of similar discussion about, well, you know, because you know, sort of a huge effects-driven tentpole movie is coming out in March. That being Watchmen, everyone started asking, looking around, being like, "What's going on here?" A summer movie season starting even earlier than it typically does.
Right
now with this, and I think analogous for this year, also coincidentally by Zack Snyder as well, we had Sucker Punch, and Battle Los Angeles for that matter.
Right, Battle Los Angeles, is the one that I was thinking of. I would say it dates to Friday, March 11th. Now, Battle Los Angeles seems to have done better in its own way, though far less artistically ambitious, probably. You know, it was the number one movie in America for, I don't know, 2 weeks or something like that. Whereas,
unless you consider mimesis to be a form of artistic ambition.
Wow.
Sorry, never mind.
So that...
Did I break the podcast? Yeah. Did I just do that?
Dead air. Sorry. It's our new signature. So Friday, March 11th.
We're trying to reclaim the Pinter pause for an American audience.
Dave, I think that's very...
Oh, I should have gone with Harold Pinter.
Funny.
I bet he just talked a mile a minute in the last 8 minutes. He's just like, shit, I have so much I have to tell you guys. Okay, hold on. First of all.
Yeah, he'd been saving it all up, hadn't he?
That's right.
No, he was writing political screeds right, like up to the day he died, wasn't he? he got very politically active in his later days. So Friday, March 11th, Battle Los Angeles, Mars needs Moms, and Red Riding Hood.
Okay, yeah. So Mars Needs Moms is like one of the biggest bombs ever in the history of ever, right?
I think so. Domestic box office, yeah, right.
And like the death knell of the Zemeckis model of computer generated movie, like animation. That's what the sort of headline story was, right? Was that like the Zemeckis model is the model of doing motion capture and then putting computer generated animation over the motion capture, which gives you those sort of like. Sort of ghastly people in like the Polar Express, right, and other kinds of movies like that. It's that like sort of creepy form of animation where you don't make the characters quite iconic enough.
It's where you set up shop in the Uncanny Valley, right?
Yes, exactly.
Uncanny Valley Ranch is what it is.
Exactly. It's like they make dressing. here in Uncanny Valley, we make only the finest.
Yeah. So this looks kind of like dressing, but kind of like something that terrifies me too. Yeah.
So just to clarify for the listeners, the Uncanny Valley is like the area in the simulation of humanity, right? Where like
not an anatomical part, as I often think it is.
Yeah. Well, yeah, where it's like you're trying to depict a human. You're close enough to the human that people don't see it as a representation of a human, right? But they see it as like a human itself. But you're far enough away from accurate depiction of a human that it's creepy, right? And is there a better definition of it than that you can think of off the top of your head?
No, yeah. If you imagine sort of verisimilitude as a continuum.
Right.
From the most representation.
And I always do.
Yeah.
Exactly.
From the most sort of symbolic to the most
as
exact.
As opposed to the early 20th century quantum theory of verisimilitude.
Right, exactly.
Sorry. Please go on, Matt.
Yeah, if you think of verisimilitude as a wave, it's from the most symbolic to the most representational, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right before you get to convincingly human. In terms of being representational, is where you get the uncanny valley.
Yeah,
yeah. It's that on either end, people are comfortable seeing these characters depicted, and are willing to sort of like they can fall into the suspension of disbelief. Either like mm-hmm. you look at something which is indistinguishable from a true human being, or you look at something which is so cartoonishly far away from being human that you understand that its cartoonishness is part of the contract of you as the witness and they as the storytellers. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere in the middle, it's just it's impossible to really tell like what side they fall on, and people are confused as to how they should feel about it.
And what's going on?
And that's how you get Beowulf or the Final Fantasy movie or whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
I also want to I think that we should talk a little bit about the economic concept of a sunk cost with Mars Needs Moms, right?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Because Mars Needs Moms came to Disney because they bought the Zemeckis studio, right?
Okay.
It was Image Movers Digital was the name of the production company. And so I think Disney bought them, right? Or at least had some sort of deal with them. And that, and at that point, when they bought them, they saw the movie and realized in their words that it was in their opinion, it was a steaming pile of doo-doo. And so what they decided to do was, sink $50, $60 million into the print and advertising budget, into the marketing of the movie and distributing of the movie, for a return of, single-digit millions at the box office, right? And so they would have been better off just putting the movie in a drawer somewhere and not releasing it, right? Because,
Now, to be fair, that does happen from time to time. I mean, we talk about the sunk cost problem being something that inexorably drives so many studios to throw shit out the window, into the movie theaters when they should just throw it into a drawer. But a good example of this is the Red Dawn remake. It has literally been sitting in a drawer at MGM, not to be released. And side rumor, I hear that they're trying to digitally alter the Chinese into North Koreans because it's not not economically viable to make fun of Chinese people in a movie.
Well, especially when the international box office has been such an important revenue stream for for Hollywood movies. Yeah, you can't. I mean, it's sort of political, the kind of the political stance that your movie takes. And by political, I mean, you know, having to do with international relations that your movie takes, you know, determines how much money it's going to make.
So let me bring this up then, because let's look at the other side of the sunk cost, right? So you come into possession of Marjanee's Moms. You watch it, you're like, wow, this is a movie for children that has creepy aliens in it that are kind of unsettling and scary, and it's about people's parents being abducted. And as such, like, children don't want to watch it, parents don't want to watch it, nobody wants to watch it. It's vaguely racist, so this movie is not going to see the light of day in terms of a broad theatrical release. You still have this thing, right? You have this, like, you have this movie. Why, is there anything else you can do with it? Can you like turn it into maybe like a corporate training video for like HR safety? Can you
the world's most expensive cautionary tale?
Exactly. Could you like take the characters and just like turn them into like spokespeople for like specific consumer products without any connection to the movie at all? Because like there's a lot of work that goes into something like that. Can you take the environments and sell them to a video game studio, right? Can you take like the 3D renders? Like, can you just like sell it for parts? Basically, is there a way to like chop shop Marjanee's Moms so that you don't actually have to sell the whole thing in one go? Which, because nobody wants it, but like split it apart and like sell it for scrap so that you can at least make back a little bit more of your money without having to go through the expense of distributing it and marketing it. And of course, marketing it is you kind of have to do if you want to distribute it, or else distributors get mad at you.
Yeah, it's you know, traditionally it's called the P&A budget, the prints and advertising budget, but it's advertising. It's not prints. You know, it's not.
it's the budget formerly known as prints.
Exactly. It's the money goes into, you know, full page newspaper ads and such like. Especially for a sort of Disney event movie like this, right? You know, it's funny, like, there is this big direct-to-video business, or there used to be. I guess it's now. You know, I've watched so many things on Netflix Instant that would have belonged on direct-to-video before I got Netflix Instant. I guess I've single-handedly, like, kept that business, kept the kind of the B-movie business afloat. But, it used to be when DVD sales were a big thing or, you know, rentals at Blockbuster and whatnot, that if you could make your movie for less than $1 million or less than maybe, you know, $1.5 million, you could make your money back, by distributing sort of direct to video, right? Like you could all those Blockbusters that had the
by selling it to the Sci-Fi Channel, right?
Yeah, all those Blockbusters that had the weird, you know, sci-fi softcore movies in the new releases, section, or the, you know, future releases section, depending on whether you're watching them alone or not. Those movies have made their money back.
Were you going blue there? Was that what that was?
Who's your favorite little rascal? Is it Alfalfa or is it Spanky? Oh, Tommy boy. I miss you, Tommy.
If you were to relive the last 8 minutes before the little death of anyone.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You know who I wouldn't choose in that case? I wouldn't choose Sting. You know, because for Sting you need the full 12-hour experience to get the
last 8 minutes. I mean, you know, yeah. It's like coming in midway through a soap opera. You're not going to know what the hell's going on. Yeah, exactly. Everyone's speaking Spanish.
Anyway, so yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, here's the trouble. You know, no one ever knows. I guess hope springs eternal, right? Like, no one ever knows whether, you know, these are sunk costs that we should ignore, or whether, you know, hey, this movie could have been a hit. I mean, I guess we would be having a very different conversation if Marjanee's Moms had been a hit, right?
Right. I mean, I think this speaks back to one of the things I was talking about when Fast and the Furious came out last year, because remember, was it 2 years ago? Where the last Fast and Furious movie
both,
came out.
Right?
What?
Both, right?
Well, the thing was that it did amazing, right? Like, the last Fast and the Furious movie did awesome in the theater. And, yep. like, so the movie, of course, the movies, as we've talked about before, the studios are focusing, it seems, more and more of their resources on spending more and more money on, like, movies that they see as lower risk, right? And there's certain ways of thinking about economics and investment that say this is pretty dumb, and that this is, in fact, like, a good way to lose all of your money, because the more you think you know what's going to happen, the more devastated you will be when the thing that you're depending upon happening doesn't happen. And as such, it would be smarter for the movie studios to make lots and lots of cheap movies and sell all of them for cheap rather than make, like, a big expensive movie and depend upon a big return and then have it not come through. Like,
this
so Mars
is
needs
also – yeah, exactly, right? You should not put your you should not put your entire retirement savings into one asset class. We don't give financial advice on the Overthinking It podcast, but you know, I'll give you that one for free, right? You
but know, I mean, of course, except that they should invest in the Overview,
right? Absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, and there's some guaranteed.
I'm not flogging the Overview because Mark wrote me a letter. He wasn't on the podcast last week, but he wrote me an email and this week after listening to us do the podcast, and he was like, "Matt, cool it with the Overview, okay."
Wait, see, it, when you put it that way, you make it seem like I'd like you know dashed off a vindictive screed against the podcast the last time. No, it was just like, hey guys, great podcast. I was laughing my ass off. By the way, blah blah blah. Other than that, totally great.
Yeah. So basically,
you know,
what,
don't buy the freaking Overview for all I care. You know, never
we're
mind.
We're doing it again. We're doing it again, but worse. Yeah. Now we're flogging the Overview without recommending that people buy it. Why are we doing this?
There's no such thing as bad publicity, Pete.
Fair enough. Oh, look, see, there's a beef. It's like a rap beef, and you should buy the album of the game because he's having a rap beef with the Overview because the Overview shot him 7 times.
Wait, do we know with all certainty that the Overview is not the name of a rapper?
No, but such things are not possible to prove. Like, wow. You can't prove a negative, well, right?
The absence of evidence.
I would say that the burden of proof is on the person who would assert that the Overview is the name of a rapper, right? Although I guess it's possible that it's that there is a rapper called the Overview out there. It might be an alias. Perhaps it should be us. Perhaps we should be the change we look to see and we want to see in the world and give ourselves our own ridiculous rap names.
Perhaps the Overview is in each of our hearts all the time.
True, true, true.
In that the Overview is.
Sorry, Pete. You were going to talk about asset allocation or something.
No, I can't talk about that because of regulations. But I will say that the movie business does make money making big movies, right? So we don't want to say that they shouldn't make big movies because it's how they stay competitive over their lower cost competition. They sort of have to. They're stuck in this high risk. Well, it's not high risk. It's sort of high structural risk, but it's not really like a high variation business, right? But they have this belief that they know what movies are going to make money and what movies aren't. And so that's the trick with something like Mars Needs Moms is that if you were just sort of willing to say, hey, maybe this movie will make money, you wouldn't have made a $100 million movie in the first place. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't $100 million, but it was probably a lot of money, right, to make that movie. Maybe it was $100 million. I don't know. I can't say I'm sure. I don't know exactly how much it cost. But like, if your attitude is like, yeah, maybe I'll release this movie and maybe people will watch it, then you probably shouldn't be investing so much money in these things, right? So it's sort of like a bit of a contradiction. You can either have the movie that you think that you spend a lot of money on, or you can have the movie that you are willing to take a chance on. Unless you have like just a shit ton of money, excuse my language, just a poop ton of money that you're willing to just shovel out for no reason because you're like Uwe Boll and like you're taking advantage of German tax shelters, and like that's just how it's going.
By the way, Pete, Marzi's mom, according to MovieInsider.com, estimated budget $150 million.
Good Lord. Good
wow, that ain't
Lord.
A lot that's, of money was sunk into this one.
That's like more than the federal of NPR or something like that.
Yeah, I want to find out like how many nations' gross domestic product was exceeded by the production cost of Mars Needs Moms.
True. Mars needs a gross domestic product. But anyway, so yeah. So I mean,
Mars needs a lot of things.
As we look forward into the summer movie preview, we should consider the amount of resources that are put in this movie and the attitude towards risk that the people making the movie seem to have. A lot of these movies are very conservative, and they're made with this idea that there's a built-in audience, and they're made with a way that we can have some sort of justification for our certainty that this movie will do well. And one of the things that we wrote about or that I wrote about and we talked about when the last Fast and the Furious movie came out, is like you can always retroactively explain why certain movies are successful and other movies aren't, but you can't necessarily explain it ahead of time, and certain things are just always going to be surprising. So that's one of the fun things about summer movie season, is you get to see what are the big hits and what are the big losers, right? Because you can never really be sure, right? Is Arthur going to be awesome? Who knows? Maybe, maybe not.
But that's we're not even there, Pete.
We haven't even made it to the second week.
We haven't made it to April. We haven't made it to the first week of April yet.
Yeah, we're now at March 18th. Releases Limitless, Paul.
That was weeks ago.
We're going back 8 minutes in time, or plus or minus a couple of weeks. By the way, the gross domestic product in 2010 of, is it Kiribati? Just about the production cost of Mars Needs Moms.
Okay.
Nice.
You could have made Mars Needs Moms twice and have the GDP of Tonga.
How many bowls of my generic cereal could I have?
That's right. Mars Needs Moms. Three days worth of fiber in Mars Needs Moms.
It would take 250 million bowls of Wheaties to eat all the...
I'm not sure you would need that many bowls of Wheaties, too. Oh, yeah. All right, never mind.
My fiber level is over 9,000.
Very
nice. Friday, March 18th, Limitless with Bradley Cooper about the guy who gets a pill that cures writer's block. Paul about finding a slightly less than adorable alien on a road trip from Comic-Con. And The Lincoln Lawyer starring Matthew McConaughey, disappointingly, with a shirt on.
It's his Oscar. That's what he has Oscar for.
Yeah.
He's getting sued.
So I would argue that none of these movies are quite event movies in the same way that, like, Sucker Punch or Battle Los Angeles or Mars Needs Moms was intended to be. Right.
Yeah. No, I think because Bradley Cooper kind of stumbled into being in Limitless. I remember hearing about he was a replacement for somebody else. And I forget exactly who it was supposed to be. But that movie was marketed pretty much as like, look, Bradley Cooper's in this movie, which I think they sort of saw as a bit of a coup, considering that the whole point of the movie seems a little bit – he's a big star now, right, supposedly. And this movie maybe was a little bit beneath him, or maybe – I don't know.
To be clear, we're talking about a movie that also stars Robert De Niro.
Right.
That's true.
This is amazing. I don't doubt what you're saying, but I find this amazing. Like, what sort of world have we come to where it's like, you know, Bob De Niro, okay, but the guy from The Hangover is in it.
Yeah. Fair enough. I know. It's ridiculous.
You know, that guy was Face from the A-Team.
Oh.
Which, you know, is my pick for most underrated summer movie of 2010. We talked about this already, but
yep.
Yeah.
Hey, okay. Well, then, if no one wants to talk about Limitless, Paul, or The Lincoln Lawyer, we should push on. To Friday, March 25th, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules. Also,
which was the number one movie that weekend, I believe. Right.
Sucker Punch.
Yeah.
So really had nothing to go up against.
Well, Diary of a Wimpy Kid is like a big deal. I mean, that's a very popular franchise in a very, chock full of money demographic for seeing movies. And I think that it's one of those things that we're getting a little bit too old to really be aware of. But that I've definitely heard that this is like the Diary of a Wimpy Kid is a big deal amongst like young children. And these movies, and this is the second movie. This is the second Wimpy Kid movie, I believe.
Yeah, and the first is just called Diary of a Wimpy Kid, right? I mean, it's based on is it a book or a series of books?
Yeah, it's one of these young adult series, yeah.
Nah.
It's an adaptation of my life.
Not Diary of a Wimpy Asian Kid. The audience wouldn't see that. They had to change him to be white, like they're going to do with Akira.
Right.
That comes out.
Oh, Jesus.
Have you heard about this?
Yeah.
Akira with, like, Robert Pattinson.
He's not Caucasian, is he?
No, Robert Pattinson is Caucasian. He's not actually a vampire.
He's not Caucasian. Oh, he's a spoiler alert.
We just have him not shower long enough to eventually.
We haven't really talked about Sucker Punch on Overthinking It, either the podcast or the site, right? I mean, none of us have seen it. But that's one reason why.
No, because we don't hate women.
Yes, that is the reason why.
I mean, I don't know. I think I'm a little bit done with Zack Snyder in terms of like being really excited to see his particular kind of filmmaking. And I don't mean to be mean about it, but like you know, I didn't really like 300 that much. And I mean, Watchmen was like a beloved story done with like a certain amount of attention to detail. And like, that's nice. And there's lots of blue penis. And like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know about maybe, I don't know about you guys, but I'm not really a huge fan of sort of like schoolgirl fetishism. Like I prefer my women adult. I don't know. Maybe that makes me.
That's
weird.
Where I was
maybe
going.
I'm bad guy. I don't know.
That's what I was thinking. I wasn't sure if I was going to say that, and then you said it. So thanks for saying that, Pete.
I want that to be on my tombstone. I was thinking about saying that, but then Pete said it, so that's okay. Yeah, you know, I don't know. I was never – I mean, not I shouldn't really impugn people for whom that is their thing because, you know, as long as it's, like, not being used in any sort of, like, destructive way or hurting people because, you know, people have weird predilections and you don't want to, you know, criticize people for – and based on their sexuality and their predilections. You can't really control that part of yourself sometimes. I mean, you control what you do with it, but you got to come to terms with what turns you on, I suppose. But I, you know, it's just never been my thing. Like, I've never really been into the like the schoolgirl stuff or like the kind of like infantilized anime girl kind of thing. It's like not really my bag.
Pete, what are some other things that don't turn you on?
Girls make Girls making out is another one. That's not really a thing that – that's not really – it doesn't do it for me as much as I think it does for other guys.
Like making out financially or
– Oh, that actually is very exciting, but I'm not allowed to talk about it because of regular
I paid off all my college loans. Pete's just like, yes.
Yeah, or like people.
I don't have so much of a restriction on like the girls' manner of dress, but I'm not – I'm rarely turned on by women – in extreme slow motion or like with extremely variable, like time frames, you know, like really slow motion drawback for the really fast motion punch.
And I have some,
just like,
I have
just pick a time frame, pick a relativistic time frame for me and just like go with it. I'll be fine with that.
Yeah. Fair enough. You know, like as the speed of the woman approaches C, like the degree to which your mother would do about her, like approaches one.
Yeah, don't go there because her mass is going to increase, Pete, and like we should not talk about that.
So here's
5'3".
Before we leave the subject, which is something we're very excited to talk about, Zack Snyder, right? He's supposed to direct the next Superman movie, which will be produced by Chris Nolan. Chris Nolan is supposed to have some significant hand in the creation of that movie. So does this not bode well for the next incarnation of the Man of Steel?
He'll have nice abs, I guess.
And be in slow motion.
Blue light.
It's got Christopher Nolan and Zack Snyder.
Christopher Nolan is producing. Zack Snyder is directing.
Yeah, so I guess it doesn't fare well for Lois Lane is what it doesn't fare well.
She's going to be in a miniskirt and she's going to get her head chopped off.
Yeah, exactly. In slow motion. Then fast motion. Then slow motion.
In nonlinear narrative slow motion. Her head was always chopped off at the beginning of the movie. Wouldn't that be awful if like the end of Superman was a big reveal that like Lois Lane has been dead the whole time and like all his attempts to save her have been like in his own mind trying to like reconstruct. That was so awful. That would be like the worst movie ever.
you heard it first here on the Overthinking. If that actually comes out to be true, Pete, I'll buy you a milkshake.
Yeah, I'll give you a dollar, Pete.
Hey, if I had a milkshake.
If decides to go, like, just have a huge career turn and go Rashomon style on the new Superman reboot, I will give you a dollar.
Great. That would be pretty great.
Have we finally made it to the present?
That sounds about right.
Near past, like the weekend that just transpired.
Like a movie that begins with a scene that takes place in the future and then flashes back to show you all the background up to that scene and then continues on past that scene. We have arrived at the weekend of Friday, April 1, April Fool's Day, the day of underthinking it. Welcome to the Underthinking It podcast, where we herp derp the shiggity bop to the level of something something dessert.
Sup, bro hands? How's it going?
Kittens.
Yeah.
OMG ponies. hey, Broheim. Listen, Broseph. No, the movies. April 1, wide release. Hop, Insidious, and Source Code.
Which are really all movies about like a bleak existential like desert for real, right?
Like, I don't know about Insidious.
A haunted house, right? Oh, okay. Insidious is a haunted house movie. The thing that's bleak about Insidious is it's that the people from Paranormal Activity and the people from Saw decided to come together and make a movie that they like pretty much rely on you recognizing their past projects in order to get you to see it. Right. And it's like, it's a guy in front of a house and you should see this movie because we made it. So in that sense, it's like sort of a bleak existential thing because it's just sort of like these people, like the narrative doesn't even really exist. It's like, am I going to pay $10 for like a produced by this and this? And then like there will be a transaction which will involve me sitting in a theater for 2 hours for some reason. Although I guess maybe some people just like horror movies, which is fine. That's another thing that doesn't really do me all that much good. I'm not a huge horror movie fan. No, Blinky is a huge horror movie fan. I know that much because I used to live with him too, and he would take the subway on Sundays.
You're just gonna beat down on my roofs the entire podcast.
We don't roll on Shabbos. It's not Shabbos.
Hey, speaking of religious beliefs or perhaps the lack thereof, it's interesting to note that Hop, the other movie that came out this weekend, apparently is a completely secular movie about Easter. Like, it's all about the Easter bunnies and like their ancient tradition of delivering eggs, and not at all about the death and subsequent resurrection of Jesus Christ.
When is Easter this year?
It is the April 20-something.
So this movie came out way early to catch that Easter crowd who follows the lunar calendar.
Yeah, they're really like locking on to the Jewish Muslim Wiccan Easter enthusiasts out there.
Hey gang, it's Rather. So I'm breaking into the recording because I have a confession to make to you. At this point, when we were recording, my microphone started malfunctioning, but we didn't know about it until we stopped and listened back to the episode. So you're about to hear a really annoying staticky sound, which makes my talking even more annoying than usual. We are really sorry for the audio problem, and I will get a new microphone before we record the next podcast, I promise. Still, there's some good stuff here, so I hope you enjoy it. And thanks for listening. Released a year later in the Eastern Orthodox countries, or released a week later in the... Wow,
yes,
I totally effed up that joke in the delivery, didn't I?
You know what creeps me out about this movie? Just looking at the poster, is that the rabbit dude, he has layered shirts on, right? He has like a long sleeve t-shirt and like a cut off flannel shirt. And he's got an iPod, right? And he's got drum set. Yeah. He's got all this accoutrement and he has no pants. And like, it's like there's a certain degree to which adding other things makes the absence of pants like more and more conspicuous.
So it's
like,
not completely about Jesus then, right? That's pretty much the way he rolled.
Well, without pants? Well, it says that in the Testament not to carry anything too fancy. Just wear a robe and have your staff and like just go walking, right? And like you're not supposed to have stuff.
Easy breeze.
Here's a question. I wish you could see this poster because like, those who are listening to the podcast at home, this iPod that he's listening to, is that like a scaled down bunny size iPod that's specially produced for the ancient and revered order of Easter bunnies? Or is it like a human sized one? It's just an enormous rabbit.
It's in his pocket. You can't see the actual
iPod. Well, you see the earbuds, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's true, but the earbuds are not giant for giant rabbit ears. That would be actually pretty funny, but probably a bridge too far. But yeah, you know what? This movie poster really reminds me of Kangaroo Jack, which of course was not really a talking animal movie. It was a Jerry O'Connell, Anthony Anderson movie about like running around in the desert. But like Jerry Bruckheimer put like a talking kangaroo in one scene so that they could put it in a preview, and it made like $150 million. But it has that like there's this smug look on the face of the kangaroo wearing the sunglasses on the movie poster. This like just smug like shit eating look, and I hate to say more profanity, but it's just like, and I feel like this rabbit is kind of pulling that on us too. It's like, hey, like I'm an animal, I'm gonna talk, like, hey, you know, you're gonna spend money on me. And it's just like, oh, I hate these cynical animal movies. It's like Oh, it's just like when it used to be they had to have them.
It just flies in the face of the caring souls of those conscious, sentient, talking animals that are out there working hard every day to make an earnest living.
It takes so little work to put talking animal in a story. Like, why just that? Like, why not do something else while you're doing it? Of course, I can't say that Hop is bad. I haven't seen Hop. I do think it has a terrible title, and I think that it's a tagline of candy, chicks, and rock and roll is obscene and like should not be and that it's listing as from the director of Alvin and the Chipmunks and the producers of Despicable Me is encouraging, but not in a specific sort of way. It's like, hey, made by totally different movies, sort of like this, either one of these movies or not like them anyway.
Now to their credit, they somehow managed to score the domain iwantcandy.com for this movie. I give them credit for that, right?
And that does deserve credit. That's a pretty awesome domain name. I bet you they like laundered like $100 million out of like some sort of tax shelter to do that. Or maybe they just squatted it. Maybe like somebody who like is working on the movie has been squatting that for years and decided to give it up for the cause.
Back from 1995, where you could register a domain name for a 6-pack of beer sent to the headquarters of the internet.
Fortress of Solitude in the new Zack Snyder abtastic Superman movie.
All right, source code, Pete. You wanna tease your article?
Oh, I'm just writing an article about the pseudoscience in it, which is terrible. It's a good movie, really good movie, and it has a pretty weak third act. But it's not a blockbuster at all. It's like a complex existential science fiction movie along the lines of like Solaris. Except with action elements a la Inception, right? So it's like, we have a movie that's really unfamiliar to everybody and is going to be very alienating. Like, let's put in a train chase, right? And like an explosion and gunplay. And like, let's make that more comfortable. And that's, that part works. The part that doesn't work is when they take a movie that is about like a very, very, very bleak existential situation and like flip the script on it and make it really happy and positive at the end, which just doesn't make a lot of sense. It just feels really hollow. The ending of the movie rings hollow. And I'm not giving anything away by saying that it ends like somewhat happily, because there's so much stuff that happens between point A and point B there, but point C and all that other stuff. I wouldn't say this is a summer blockbuster at all, and I wouldn't say it's my favorite Jake Gyllenhaal movie I saw in the last 6 months, which would be Love and Other Drugs, which is awesome and people should see it. It's a good movie. It's well acted. It's well done. And you could talk about it for a long wanted to. It's the kind of movie that Parrish would say we shouldn't talk about because it's worthy. It's like it like deserves the level of scrutiny that we would apply to it. And as such, like it shouldn't be on overthinking it. We should, in fact, talk about Hop instead, which I did not see, but could have seen. So there you go. One of my options, I saw it on a date, and one of my options is I could have seen Lincoln Lawyer instead. But I did not.
But instead you went to Source Code?
Yeah, there were a number of options. Jane, which is out there somewhere.
Which movie did she go to?
Oh, she went to go see Insidious, because she's been locked in like a horrible attic. And like that's what they watch in the horrible attic that she's locked in her story. So
well, that was full circle.
Air joke, ripped from the headlines, brought to you live, like up to the second. Huh. Hey guys, did you read that book that was written 120 years ago? I don't know, when was Jane? Was Jane Eyre? Is that old? Probably, right? Jane Eyre is an old ass book.
Oh, Jane Eyre was this week. Oh no, Jane Eyre is coming out later, I guess, right?
Oh, maybe. It's out. It's out, right?
Jane Eyre is out, isn't it?
Yeah,
we totally missed it.
We'll go. Yeah.
Damn it, I had all my. I was going to cosplay for the opening. I was going to camp out in front of the theaters.
Yeah, I was going to wear my bonnet to the opening night.
Just your bonnet.
All right. We move now into the future, finally, with next week's movies, which are Arthur, Hannah, Soul Surfer, and Your Highness. Your Highness being the comedy, the kind of medieval.
Medieval drug comedy is what it is.
The medieval stoner comedy. A kind of Monty Python and the Holy Grail for the current crowd. And Hannah.
It's more like Black Knight meets Pineapple Express, right?
Yeah. It's Black Knight for the white crowd.
Yeah.
And Hannah is a, here's the log line is a 14-year-old killing machine, a 14-year-old girl raised by her father to be a cold-hearted killing machine must learn how to be a girl. So it's kind of the opposite.
Zack Snyder. Oh, wait, sorry.
It's kind of the opposite of Kick-Ass. Right?
Sucker Punch? Oh, you mean
no.
Sucker
Punch, yeah. No, oh, I mean, oh. No, I mean Kick-Ass with
Chloe
Moretz as the character whose name I can't think of.
Hit Girl.
Hit Girl, right. Yeah, with Nicolas Cage as her father. It's the kind of, you know how sometimes you get in pop culture, you get a... you get a sort of comic version of something, and then you get kind of a sanctimonious version of something. This sounds like the sanctimonious version of Hit Girl and Nicolas Cage, right?
I was thinking of it as the serious version of Kevin Kline in In-N-Out, right, where she like tries to learn how to be a girl because that's what everyone says that she should be, but then she realizes she's a killing machine and should go be with Tom Selleck because that's what he's destined to do. That was a deep cut. I'm sorry. Wow. That was a long time ago. That movie was a long time ago.
Honestly, if you hadn't Selleck'd right at the end there, I would have just booed the entire time. But you brought it. You had me at Selleck, really.
Definitely.
Hey, can I bring up something about Arthur? You guys have probably seen the ads around this all around town because it seems like it's being promoted very heavily by the studio. Its tagline is the world's only lovable billionaire. And I mean, if that isn't a straight up play for class warfare, I don't know what is. I'm not joking either. I mean, like they're very much playing feeding off of sort of the populist rage, bankers and like the super wealthy, right?
Yeah, but you call it class warfare, and you're legitimizing an inane political argument against it, right? Which is like the cry that like from conservatives that this stuff is like, oh, you're going class warfare because you want to preserve like
warfare may be too strong a word. Classist. It is invoking.
I think it's just it's invoking like the public moment and like the rage specifically at like Wall Street and stuff, and like at rich people. I mean, I don't think it's not class warfare unless people are actually being hurt. I mean, maybe it is warfare. Maybe war is an extension of all sorts of conflict, and maybe this is politics by other means. But I know what you mean. I know what you're talking. I know the phenomenon you're talking about. I just don't like to buy into the hype around it too much because. When I see it, right, that we're having some sort of revolution. It's definitely playing into, like, the resentment of rich people, which has always been, or not always, but is a fairly, common position. It's easier to hate rich people than to hate the Chinese because, the rich people don't think of themselves as the rich people, right? Rich people, like, that's the secret. That's the big secret and why the class warfare isn't going to work, which is that, and this is verifiable through market research, like, most rich people don't think of themselves as this kind of rich person, even if they are. Like, they think of themselves from, like, the person who was, like, hardworking and had to deal with all the stuff that they had to deal with in their life, or think of themselves in the moments in their lives where they were more humble or had to deal with more crap, and they think about the people who are richer than they are that make them feel inadequate, right? So it's, like, even somebody who is making millions of dollars would, like, not identify with Arthur and would be like, yeah, I hate those billionaires, you know what I mean? So in that sense, it's sort of like a one-way warfare because everybody is, like, looking to the person next to them being like, okay, who's the bad guy? Right, and then the answer is, I guess, the guy who married Scarlett Johansson. That seems fair. that's who they got married, right? They married Scarlett Johansson. Is that? Huh. Oh, well, who is? Didn't Russell Brand just marry somebody super hot?
He just married Katy Perry.
Oh, Katy Perry. That's right. I'm sorry. Yeah. Scarlett Johansson just got divorced from Ryan Reynolds, right? Or
wait, really? I gotta go. I'm sorry. Ryan Reynolds is back on the market.
Yeah.
I mean, damn it.
And then this is also – Arthur is the second Russell Brand movie in as many weeks because he provides the voice of the rabbit, doesn't he, in Hop?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wasn't that nice?
It's not clear to me that he knew he was in Hop at the point of recording. Like, they might have just followed him around with a tape recorder and be like, yeah, sure, we can – honestly, we can probably weave a plot together about this. We'll throw some, like, cute tiny chicks and some marshmallow peep humor.
I got to say, I like Russell Brand. I think he's pretty funny.
I like him, but I feel like before – when I was just seeing advertisements for the things that he was in, I was expecting to really like him, and I just kind of – I don't like him. I just like him. And so, like, it would be cool to hang out with them, you know, at recess, but I don't want to go to the prom with them. So, like, you know, get them to the Greek, like, that was funny, but it wasn't super awesome, you know, the Sarah Marshall movie, whatever, was forgetting
Sarah Marshall. I mean, I almost feel his real strength is in his improvisation stuff and his stand-up comedy and not in the movies that he does. If you want to find out about Russell Brand, YouTube search two things. Search Russell Brand Forgetting Sarah Marshall audition, and YouTube search Russell Brand The Tempest rehearsal, because there is
Was he Caliban? Please tell me he was Caliban.
No, he was Trinculo, I think. Stefano or Trinculo. He and Alfred Molina were the dynamic duo, were the kind of the Laurel and Hardy, Abbott and Costello team of Stefano and Trinculo, I think. So there's a like in the first day of rehearsal, and this was all recorded, it's all videoed, there were cameras in the rehearsal room, and Julie Taymor said to him, "So what do you think the backstory of Trinculo is?" And he launches into this 10-minute extemporaneous story about the origins of Trinculo, where he grew up in Italy, and how he got, like, how he got, like, in the king's retinue, and how he found his way onto this boat that was shipwrecked in the tempest. That is, it's just glorious. It's wonderful. And at the end, the camera pans over to Alfred Molina, who, like, shakes his head and says, "You are the only person I know in the world who can do that." The other one, I know, right? Yeah,
he's never listened to the Overthinking It podcast.
Alfred Molina knows you, right? So,
yeah, he does.
Are you going to take this crap from Alfred Molina? I guess that's what I'm asking.
I wasn't going to bring this up, but I actually saw Alfred Molina this weekend. I was involved in something that he was involved in, and so yeah,
Molina.
I wanted to say Fred.
The girl please for her dance.
I wanted to say Fred, because that's what, you know, that's what his buddies call him. Fred, you... No, I'm kidding. I'm not friends with Alfred Molina. Anyway, but then... So the other thing is his audition for Forgetting Sarah Marshall, where you see, like, Jason Segel in the room, and it's, you know, it's they videotape these auditions now, and it's they give him an improvised scene to do as this rock and roll star character that he plays in that movie, and he does this incredible again extemporaneous thing. That's just glorious. I'm quite a fan. I'm a creepy stalker in a way, because then, like, I started YouTube searching his appearances on the David Letterman show, many of which are quite funny. He has this way of talking that's a little exaggerated for the interviews and stuff. And he says, "Hello, Dave. How are you?" And, you know, apparently, like...
You should have stretched out before trying that accent.
"Hello, Dave."
You can't just leap right into that.
Yeah, nearly. I pulled a tonsil or something like that doing that.
What's a solid Alfred Molina impression, though?
British accent. Alfred Molina. I didn't know he was British. I thought he was...
Was anyone else shocked to learn that he's actually British?
Like Italian, or something. It's funny.
Well, he always plays, filthy, nondescript, subaltern minority in every movie that... Or up until very recently in most of the movies he's in. Like, the fact that he's British was a total shock to me.
Right. For example, in he plays an octopus who is also a doctor in Spider-Man
3. Yeah, exactly. You know, which is, I mean, a powerful minority, but underrepresented, I think. I'll point out, a hybrid German-Greek doctor as well, Otto Octavius.
Soul Surfer.
Right. Surfer. Which I was just saying, that's the movie about the girl... who gets her arm bitten off by a shark, right?
Yeah, a surfer chick who gets her arm bitten off by the shark and triumphantly gets back up on the board. and surfs again.
Which makes it the, like, Dante's Peak to the volcano of 127 hours. Because these movies always come out in pairs, no matter what they're about. There's always two of them. Deep Impact and Armageddon. You know, all this. And now it's like there's two movies about people's hands getting chomped off or torn off or cut off to come out. They're stupid. Freaking thing. Anyway, I just wanted to get that out there because I felt like that coincidence was a little bit too ridiculous. And neither movie really makes it clear what you're getting into when you're going to go see this movie, which is not nice. That is mean. Why would you do that? It's like, oh, you should go see this movie Volcano about Tommy Lee Jones hanging out on his beat as a cop. Why is it called Volcano? No reason. You should just go see it.
In college, he boxed. That was his boxing name, I think.
It's about doing marijuana through the type of vaporizer called the Volcano.
Oh, wow. I gotcha.
Named for the
box. If only that were true. Mm-hmm.
And then,
I'm not sure that can be true, though, right? Because, if not for the fact that this were the movie about the girl who gets her arm bitten off by a shark, how would you advertise this movie?
Well, they advertise it as the movie with the chick who surfs.
Is that Blue Crush 2, where
the preview that I've seen definitely shows her being traumatized and carted off into an ambulance and surfing with one arm as well.
Oh, I got it. So it's like Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken.
I haven't seen that, but I'll take your word for it.
That movie is awesome and awful and amazing. That's the movie about the girl who does the horse jumping, and she's blinded in a terrible horse jumping accident. Horse die like diving horses off of diving boards in giant buckets of water. She does it during the Great Depression. I do not. It's a Disney movie from a long time.
Oh my god! Wait a minute. I think my sister forced me to watch. I have a sister who's 5 years older than I am, so I was like the frequent recipient of things that are actually bad. And nations when I was a child. So,
and I also have a lot of sisters, so I saw a lot of movies also that a guy see. One of those is Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken. Because she learns, she gets blind, she learns to feel the horse. And it's all elaborate sexual metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit much. But yeah.
Even the Great Depression.
Yeah.
Wait for it. Well, do you know how to feel the horse? Do you do you know how to ride the snake? In that case, you should probably watch Your Highness that weekend. We should wrap up. We should leave the podcast there. But if you have anything to say about the about the movies that we've discussed, and you're a chump, you can email us at podcast@overthinking.com or call 203-285-6401. Don't do that. Don't do that. Download the overview instead if you want to waste your time. No, the overview is a fine product, and we're very, very proud of it. You should go though onto the site and find the show notes for this episode of the podcast and leave a comment there, because we are into the many dozens of comments every week. It's great the community that we have around the podcast, and it's great the people who are listening to it. So make your thoughts known there, and not only do we listen and chat with you, but you can chat with one another. And really, the listeners of this podcast, in a lot of cases, are a lot more interesting than the podcasters. Or I'll just speak for myself, than the host of the podcast. Oh, wait. I didn't mention what site, did I?
No, you didn't.
No, I should. You know what site
it is?
That's
like doing a summer movie preview and not talking about any summer movies.
Not even making it to...
Preview.
Yeah, whoever said we'd get to Arthur, you win the pot. And whoever said we'd get to Your Highness, you win the pot. www.overthinking.com, where we subject the popular culture to a level of scrutiny.
You guys, I'm hungry.
Was anyone else confused? Did anyone else think that it was Fantastic Four Rise of the Soul Surfer?
I thought that for a second.
I was a lot more excited about that. Where Galactus bites off her arm. I'm sorry, I thought your arm was a world. Let me buy lunch.